Seven Days. I just noticed you swearing, and I was like, this is a swearing podcast, but like, I'm full PR
mode. Yeah, no, I thought I'd try and throw it in. Yeah, I know, I was in full PR mode, and I'm like, okay, this is a swearing podcast.
I keep trying to think. Like, I don't naturally include them very often, unless something's going really wrong.
Swear as much as you like, boys. Go nuts. Hello and welcome to Carry On Swearing. I'm your host, Jake Parker, and today I have two amazing guests. They're going to quickly introduce themselves of what they do. I've just warned them that this is a swearing podcast, so they're about to understand what that actually means when we get into it. So let's start with Josh. Josh, did you want to introduce yourself, buddy?
My name is Josh Martin. I'm a prop maker and one of four directors of Little Shop Props, which is a prop making company for film and TV.
Fantastic.
And I am also one of the four directors at Little Shop Props, and I am also a prop maker and sort of researcher for various projects that we do,
Amazing, perfect, guys. So my first question for you guys is, everyone keeps asking me, did I go to university to get into film and TV? And that's a quick question, and I don't know how to answer that to them, because they keep asking me, should I go, should I not go? Did you guys go to university? Josh, do you want to go first, buddy? Did you go to uni?
I did go to university, did nothing to do with the industry that I'm in now, though. I went to a performing arts university and studied songwriting, and then the world all shut down during COVID. And I was bored and had a 3D printer and kind of just started figuring things out, started chatting to James and a couple of others who were fairly like-minded, and yeah, that's sort of my origin story, if you will, of how we started on this, how I started on this weird little journey we're on.
Amazing. And what about you, James? Were you also 3D printing?
I started at a different direction. I went to college and did engineering, and then ended up at a very young age actually sort of finding my way into the product design side of the industries, in the sense of like the official replica line. And so I'd started off using sort of lathe and, sort of machining stuff, and then in the lockdown I got a 3D printer and started to transition more into this side of things. But I never went to university. I just sort of went in it straight from the back of college, or during college actually.
I think with the industry and a lot of the creative industry, it's not really based on degrees and, you know, qualifications and stuff like that. So much of it is who you know, right place, right time, and trying to break into that world. So I think, you know, we've had prop gigs come through, but they've never gone, right, can I see your prop making qualifications from university and stuff like that. It never really is a question, where I think it is in other industries, like, I don't know, financial stuff and all that kind of thing is very much qualification based.
Or being like a doctor or that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's also a good one, yeah.
yeah. Somewhere where you have to... I mean, I think there are levels in the industry where you might need to know something. For instance, if you were working in, like, pyrotechnics, I'd probably want to see some sort of health and safety training.
Yeah.
Whereas when you end up doing what we're kind of doing, there is a level of you can get away with just, I can do this kind of thing and get there. It's a case of more so what you can do rather than how you can do it. You don't have to show you're working all the time like you do in a maths test. It's kind of just, I know what the answer is and I can get you there. But I echoing what Josh says, it is a case of sort of positioning yourself to be in the right place. Now, that's not to invalidate, though, people who do university courses, because I think you can learn a lot of valuable skills from them, and they can put you in a position that sets you up to do some things. But I don't necessarily think it's the be-all or end-all about actually having done that to actually do these things, because a lot of people in the industry are living examples of the fact that that isn't actually necessarily relevant all the time.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I agree. I did film and TVs, and I don't think it... And I've had a lot of guests that say they have benefited from going to uni, which is fair enough. That's their experience. Myself, I learned the basics of cameras and lighting and sound, which is all exciting, but they never taught me about networking and about how to actually get your foot in the door, who you should message, who you shouldn't message, what should a draft of an email look like. Maybe know what the guys do before you start emailing about absolute nonsense that they've never worked on. What about you guys? What is network important for your gig?
Yes, critically important.
Definitely. networking is important for every gig ever. If you want to go places, networking is what you need to do. And networking is not fun. Networking can be fun. Networking is stressful at quite a lot of points.
It's very hit or miss sometimes. You can spend a lot of time having a conversation with someone that leads nowhere, or spend like 2 minutes talking to one person that leads to this very big gig. There's no rule book on how it works. I think the most important thing I've ever learned in regards to networking is don't try to network. There is a common thing where people try too hard to network, and the trick is to put yourself in the right place at the right time with the right people and just, you know, do what's normal in that situation. Don't try to...
The old cliche of just, like, be yourself and just, like, treat people like people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be networking with the most next-level director or cinematographer or prop maker or, you know, whatever. They don't really want to be, you know, fanboyed over and all that kind of stuff. Just chat to them like a human being, and that will probably get you further than if you're trying to sort of go in with the mindset of, right, I need to, you know, network and do this.
I need to leave this building with 5 jobs under my belt kind of thing. Like, it's a case of 9 times out of 10, I will go to a place where there are networking opportunities, but I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to go here. I might bump into someone cool and something might come out of it, but it's never the first point. And I think if you go into these situations trying to do that, you will set yourself up for failure, because people can tell when these things are just a sort of single-minded purpose. And often I find people don't enjoy having them sort of selves reduced down to, oh, they want to use me to get through to this, they're a contact. You know, the best way to network and sort of find these jobs is to actually build up relationships and friendships with the people in important places or people in good positions to get you places, because it will open doors for you naturally rather than trying too hard, effectively.
Speaking about fandom, obviously you guys make a lot of props for many, many, many shows. Do you ever have anyone walk into the building that's a huge fan of, like, Doctor Who or the Gladiators or anything like that, and you're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't hire that person because they're too much of a fan? Or do you hire them just based on skill and their dedication to the job?
It varies, I'd say. There is a level of... passion is good, you know, that you cannot be hurt really by having someone who is passionate for the job, because as we all know, working in this industry, there is a level of hours and going to different locations, and no, I can't go on holiday that week with you to your partner because I've got to be over here in Wales doing this thing for 4 weeks, sorry, that you have to put up with in this industry and jobs you do. So passion is never a bad thing, and especially if someone is passionate about some of the projects you've worked on, it can work in your favour. But it does have to be backed up with, I find, the actual talent, the spark that's there, that kind of thing. And that's not to say that skills can't be taught as well, because things can be taught to people and they can improve over time. But there has to be that potential in amongst that thing, because if I've had people message saying, oh my god, I'm such a fan of this and I'd love to work on it, and you go, okay, well, what do you do? Oh no, I just want to work on it. And you go, that's not
what are you bringing to the table, sunshine?
Yeah, I appreciate the passion and I get it, because, you know, I wanted to work on the thing too because of XYZ, but like, I've got there's a function I fulfill in that machine, which you can't just turn up and go, oh, I just want to do something on it, you know, I'll make tea if I have to, kind of thing. Like, it can work in some situations, but 9 times out of 10, again, it kind of...
Yeah, I agree with James in that a passion for the project and the overall sort of mission statement, as it were, of what we do is definitely good, but, you know, just your average fan who's coming in and like, yeah, no, I'd love to work for you, but I've got, you know, none of the skills that would work in your industry can be a problem. I find I have the issues of whenever there's someone really cool in the room, on, like, for example, we were screening for a film we worked on last summer, the other weekend, and Angus Barnett was there, who was in the Pirates of the Caribbean films, which I adored as a child. And he was in the film that we worked on, which was already massively cool. And then got to chat to him for a while at the screening, and the whole time in my head I was like, don't quote Pirates of the Caribbean to him. Don't do it. That would be bad. It's kind of like, as a fan of so many things myself, I find myself having to sort of go, right, okay, professional time.
No, I had the same thing with Angus, because it's very much a case of, like, you just want to go, oh, I really want to quote that scene from the Pirates of the Caribbean 1, where you're talking about the ship with the black sails couldn't possibly be anything but the Black Pearl. I was like, oh, God, but you have to, like, bottle it down and be cool about it. You can, there is a level of, it doesn't hurt to tell people that you like their work and stuff like that, but you have to know the balance of, okay, they are a human being, not some sort of mythical deity that's appeared in your life. You have to kind of balance the scales.
I completely agree with you. And that's the thing, is that when does professionalism start turning into, I really want to talk to that person? When, has there ever been a time when you've seen someone and gone, okay, apart from this person we've just mentioned, but an actual person, you've gone, if I talk to them, I might ruin my career from how much of a big fan I am? Where does professionalism still stand in that matter?
There is a level of that. I mean, it's a few people now. It used to be sort of like, when I first got into this, I would be like, oh my God, you know, shaking and all that kind of stuff. Like, that was when I wasn't really interacting too much with people from that sort of world.
Yeah, you kind of get desensitized to it.
Yeah, you start to understand. You go, oh, you're just a person. Like, I mean, the amount of people, like, for instance, obviously, like, I really like Doctor Who, but the amount of people now that I kind of know personally from Doctor Who that I would have 10 years ago been absolutely freaking out about. But, like, the other day we did a photo shoot. I said the other day, like, a year ago, we did a photo shoot with Paul McGann, where he'd got his whole new costume made up and we'd made a sonic screwdriver for it. And I was actually taking the pictures of him in the costume, and I was just getting to go, right, do the doctory pose here, and then hold the screw. And in that moment, I'm kind of sitting there going, I have the Eighth Doctor, BBC's Eighth Doctor Who, stood in front of me, and I'm getting to just go, yeah, hold this Time War book, hold this, hold that Cyberman head, hold the Dalek gun over your shoulder like a baseball, just go for it, my son. And like, just in that moment, you kind of go, this is just a very nice actor from Liverpool who happens to also have been successful enough to appear in that show I really like. And you have to kind of understand that professionalism matters, because it can really change how people view you as kind of like either an equal, or it's not to say that people look down upon fans, because they definitely don't, because obviously fans are what makes us, you know, or at least it makes them in the industry succeed. But it is a level of, you reassess in your brain how to approach the person you're talking to if they see you as, oh, you're a fan of my work, I'll sign your autographs and so forth and take a picture of you, rather than kind of, you are a person who works in my industry as well, and I get to sort of show the other side of me, from personal side of me, that when you're working with me, you develop that relationship with.
Yeah, I agree. And I think to a certain extent as well, there's often so much going on that you don't have time to think about what's actually happening. Like, you'll be working on a gig, and like the shoot, you know, that was a hectic day. We'd ferried props from all over the country, and it was like, right, we've got this amount of time, got to get everything done, got to get this, that and the other. You had makeup artists, you had hair, all that kind of stuff going on. And while you're in the moment, it's kind of like, okay, right, we just got to, you know, get all this done and move on, this, that and the other. And then you kind of sit down afterwards and go, oh, hold on, that did just happen. That's quite strange.
I mean, particularly for that shoot, I was very fueled on energy drinks and running on very little sleep, as I'd had I'd had an ungodly amount of things to put together for that shoot. Like, any prop he'd basically ever held had to sort of be finished and then taken down to London. So I was kind of like, whoa, this is all happening. And then, like, straight afterwards, I kind of got to process the information, what had happened. Kind of like, oh, okay, right. Like,
We sat and had a pizza afterwards. That was kind of the, oh, okay, that was what just happened. We just did that.
We got to process, yeah.
As I work in the same industry as you guys, I work in prop mix to dressing to standby. I've noticed that when you work on like a critic and stuff like that, it kind of shatters when you have to move it, especially marble. You have to move it from one location to the other. Has that ever happened to you guys?
Yeah, I can think of a few stories.
I was thinking of Louise Jameson and the Dalek gun. That was less
it broke in transit, and
That one got to.
She just abused the poor thing.
Yeah, that one was more on set.
We delivered this gorgeous Dalek gun, And
got it all the way safely from England all the way to Cardiff as well.
Safely from, yeah, all the way down to Cardiff. And, yeah, it was all great when we handed it over, showed it off. It was perfect. And then James went to go pick it up and it was like in far more pieces than it arrived.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh God, what's happened to my son?
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had it. Anything? Have we had anything break particularly in transit?
We did when we sent up to for that fan film.
Oh yeah. We sent a sonic blaster up to this fan film, and it ended up breaking in half in transit because we
snapped in transit. Apparently, yeah. I don't trust
them.
If they're watching, I think they broke it.
Well, anyway, we put a strengthener in the middle of it now, but it's one of those things that we kind of had to learn from. But I think that's the only time anything's actually broken before we've got it to set. I think
that has to go to set. Yeah, I'd say so.
We had a bit of trouble with the prop we did for Gladiators recently, which they've not revealed yet. We can say we worked on it, but we can't say what it particularly is. But hopefully soon. But the prop had like everything was pretty solid on it except for like one bit that we did down the bottom that we weren't quite sure on. Nothing's broken yet, but something moved and we went, that's not good. But we'd only been given a week to put the thing together, and only half of that time was actually
the other thing with this.
Yeah, it's often with especially
fuck all time to do these things.
Yeah, it was very strenuous in that sense. Like we only had 7 days. I just noticed you swearing, and I was like, "This is a swearing podcast." But like, I'm full PR mode.
Yeah, no, I thought I'd try and throw it in. Yeah, I know. I was in full PR mode, and I'm like, "Okay, this is a swearing podcast."
I keep trying to think. Like, I don't naturally include them very often, unless something's going.
Oh, I swear like a trooper, but PR mode kicked in massively.
Yeah, unless something's going really wrong.
Swear as much as you like, boys. Go nuts.
I feel like I'm going to naturally insert it now, otherwise I'm just going to sit here just like random Tourette's occasionally and just to meet my quota. How many have we got per episode? Is it like 12 swears or something? We can't say the C word though, I presume. That's off.
I've said the C word multiple times.
I see. All right, okay.
It's a swearing podcast. Say what you want when you want.
There's a chance my grandparents will watch this, so I'll reserve the C word.
Your grandparents have definitely said it at some point, to be fair. But actually, digressing quite far back, I have just thought of something earlier on. We talked about having someone being a fan of the thing you're working on. That can not work in your favour if you are solely a fan of that particular thing as well. That was one thing I'd forgot to mention, is that sometimes, like, we're using Doctor Who again as an example. If you only ever want to work on Doctor Who and you don't want to do anything else, and that's the only thing you've got a passion for, then that also works in your... You have to vary what you're okay with. Yeah, because if you have absolutely zero interest in putting together this random thing that needs to be made for a Marvel movie next week, you're not going to last particularly long in that field, because you need to be able to vary your interests and actually be interested in the craft in general, not just the show or program or whatever, you know, or movie you're interested in following. And so, yeah, sorry. Back to where we were now, but I thought that just came to mind.
You going to throw a swear word in there now, or going to wait until you get another answer for another question?
Fuck it, sure, why not? Let's... Well, why not? I've spent years not swearing online. Like,
that
actually, all of my captions, everything...
Miranda Cosgrove vibes, that was.
Yeah. I cuss a little, you know, sometimes. Like, behind closed doors, yeah, sure. But, like, I've spent so long, like sort of, what's the word, curating this image of myself that it feels completely unnatural to me to throw it in anymore. Second this goes off, it's like that SpongeBob thing where it's just like, you know, the foghorns and all that sort of stuff. The dolphin noises, that's the one.
Yeah. Let me kind of explain why it's a swearing podcast. So basically, in the industry we all work in, it's probably one of the only industries you're allowed to swear as much as possible, because if something goes wrong, you're not there to offend anyone. You're on set and something goes wrong, or you're in post-production, it kind of happens. You kind of just go into, fuck's sake, and everyone's like, Round of applause. That was a good one. That was a good swear. You know what I mean? And something like that.
I feel like we work in an industry where it's fair because we're all very stressed most of the time anyway. And everyone's on the cusp of it. I feel like in certain industries, going back again to the medical profession, if your doctor sat there going, oh, fuck, then you're really so possibly not the best. But you're kind of going, hang on, what was that? What was that then? Oh, no.
Looking at your charts going, oh, fuck. Sorry, boss.
Ooh, bugger. This is a... Ooh. you've got life insurance there. But, you know, like... It's fine in that regard, but yeah, no. Sometimes you just need to sort of to let it out, and it does crop up.
Yeah, there was
up
a fair
often.
Few on the Gladiator build.
Yeah,
when we were together, that was
yeah that one again. That was a special exception as well, because we'd had they came to us on the Friday and they said they needed it by the following Tuesday, and then they didn't approve the design until I think at least like.
Wednesday or Thursday.
And so by that point it was printing it out as much as we could and then waiting for materials to arrive, because obviously some materials we couldn't order without their approval on the material of choice and so forth. And so we were waiting for that to arrive, and it sort of arrived in time for us to spend sort of Sunday, sort of all of Sunday and, well, half of Sunday and Sunday night doing it. And I think we're up about 3 a.m. sort of 2 a.m. 3 a.m. kind of still working on the thing.
Yeah, it was,
and by that
like
point we'd hit
3:30 by the time I went to bed for that little power
we were
nap.
Giving Shakespeare a run for his money on sort of inventing new words. It was quite something. It was that, but it this isn't called Carry On Screaming Carry On Swearing because you're a fan of the Carry On movies, or is that just a byproduct?
No, but I'm a big fan of the Carry On.
That's a completely nerdy question.
That was a good, question. I do like the Carry On films. I'm a big fan. And obviously, the Carry On films are films, obviously, in their own respect. So I guess, in a way, I kind of maybe self-consciously called it Carry On for that reason alone. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of liked the Carry On, because I'm never going to question anyone for swearing on set. I don't really care that someone did swear on set. But it's just more that you can't really swear in other professions. Like you said, doctor. So if a doctor's there doing surgery, like, oh, fuck, that's wrong. You know, I mean, it's just...
Yeah. Yeah, there's some there. School teachers as well, I feel like, shouldn't, you know, if someone's going, you know, they're marking your test and suddenly you just hear a sort of distant, ooh, shit. Like, at that point, you're kind of going, miss, I don't know if you really should have said that one. Sorry, what's happened here? It's just like, no, but also, actually, going to the Carry On movies, actually, I think going back to the question about whether or not you need to do university or whatever, when you look at most of the classic movies we all bow down to in the sense of, like, they're, you know, classic cinema, don't think any of them actually had any qualifications in half of the stuff most people do nowadays. A lot of them just kind of had an interest and did it. I mean, and a lot of them invented stuff. I mean, I don't think Ray Harryhausen went to like animation school particularly in the sense of doing what he ended up doing, because what he ended up doing was kind of almost revolutionary in certain aspects. So
yeah, I think so much of it was like that. Like, you look at the old ILM stuff, and all the stuff that they did. I mean, they were coming up with ways to make films that were completely on the fly and new and revolutionary. So, you know, they might have, you know, qualifications and learning in some other respects in terms of, you know, model making or specialist painting and stuff like that. But when it actually came down to it, it was their creativity that was, you know, that they sort of get remembered for and stuff. So it's, yeah, I think...
And there's no handbook on it. I mean, for instance, again, with the original Star Wars stuff, no one sat down and went to school and went, at some point you're going to need a lot of camera flash handles that you will stick things to, and this is a discipline you must learn. It's, you just kind of go, oh, that'll do, we'll use that and just do this to it. And you kind of adapt to whatever job it is using the skills you have learned over the time. But again, school and, you know, being able to go to the sort of education side of things and university can be a really useful tool, and it does give you a good standing immediately and a good selection of the disciplines, but not all people learn academically in that sense as well, which I think is a thing that sort of has always been pushed upon us from when we were going to schools, like everyone learns in the same way.
Yeah.
Some people don't learn in that way and can't learn in that way and find it much easier to kind of just do the thing.
Yeah, I had that with like my drama and my DT teachers. Interestingly, I'm now working as a prop maker. My drama and my DT teachers kind of just went, fuck off and do it. Like, it was very much, you know, leave you to your own devices and come up with something at the end. And that, to me, was always a better way of doing things. Obviously, there's things that you have to teach, and there are sort of, you know, your typical classroom vibes in that sense. But yeah, I just found that trying things out for myself and learning through mistakes, I think, is a very important thing as well. Just like trying something, if it doesn't work the first time, you've learned something from that.
Trial and error, yeah, definitely. It's a case of, you know, no one is perfect first time at everything. There is always going to be a test run. Somewhere you've done a bit of paint and you've gone, oh, I put that on too thick or whatever. Next time I know not to put it on too thick. There's always a case of that. No one is sort of perfect straight out of the gate. And there's no, as well, there's no...
As if they were, they'd be a psychopath.
it's important as well not to measure yourself against other people, I guess, as well, is the fact that you can only do as good as you can do.
I think that's a big thing in the creative industry. I think comparing yourself to others and, like, looking at other people in creative industries and going, oh, they're doing this, why am I not doing that? Like, how have they managed to get onto this? Why aren't we? Kind of thing. Like, I found that a lot with music when I was doing that at uni, like when somebody was doing a gig or putting out a like release of something, I found myself sort of going, oh, how come they got that gig? Why didn't I, you know, why are they putting out music? Why am I not doing that? You know? And I think that in a very competitive sort of cutthroat to an extent way that the industry works, you sort of always do have to be comparing yourself to others, but you can't take it too far, I think.
There's a respectful level of holding yourself to an industry standard. There's kind of, oh, that guy's really good at paint, I want to be really good at paint. There's that level of that, but not particularly competitiveness in the sense of like actually going, you know, this I want to be better than this person, because there's you don't get very far in life having that attitude of wanting to be better than other people, because in the end of the day you end up working in teams so often in the industry that having a solo mindset is never going to work in your favor. But again, though, with sort of the fastest way to get to where you want to be is slowly in this industry, because you have to sort of understand that not everyone joins up when they're 18. Not everyone's there when they're 22. Everyone finds it at the right time and will get the right gigs when they get there, as long as they work hard and put themselves in the right positions. I mean, I saw Twisters the other day, and I think Daisy Edgar Jones is about my age. And so I'm sitting there going, oh my God, she's now an actress working in Hollywood movies on the big screen. But then you look at Glenn Powell, and obviously he's been working for ages, so like that's not anything against Glenn Powell's career, but he's 35 and he's doing the same movie as her, and they're both the two main leads. So like, he's 35 and he's got that job. Doesn't mean that because she's around our age that we're doing badly, you know, because we could be his age and then getting this gig for the first time. So it's a case of understanding that there's no metric for how this should work.
Yeah, there's no one right way.
No, there's not. Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's hard to look at someone else's career. For example, I had a young man come up to me the other day and say, you worked on Doctor Who. That's incredible. I want to do that. I said, well, you might do one day, but obviously don't look at my career and be like, oh, that's where, you know, I'm jealous of where you are. Make your own career. And at one point, I'll look at your career and go, wow, you worked on Avengers 17. That's amazing. Now I'm jealous of you for working on that. Never look at someone else's career and be like, oh, I can't achieve that. When you can. You can easily achieve that if you keep working hard. Show people dedication. The thing people's like, well, I've got no experience. I get that. I understand. We've all been there. We've all had no experience before. It's more about dedication. If you can get to one location to the next location, driving or not, and you're more than willing to get there, I class that as dedication.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and often dedication is what shows through the most, being, you know, people being able to rely on you for certain things makes them want to come back to you. And then you can kind of build up this rapport that means that when they've got the next job, they go, oh, of course. And that's how a lot of our gigs sort of come about, is someone who's worked with us will either call us back, or they will, oh, I've got this mate who knows this. Like the short film we worked on, one of our friends who we'd worked with on another thing, he recommended us to the director of that film. And then he came to us and he did that. And it's a case of just putting out this this sort of relationship with people into the community brings back a lot of stuff to you in the end, if you actually, you know, take time to sort of build it up.
Yeah, I agree. What is one of the best products you've guys worked on?
I mean, I feel like the collection box set was probably one of the best ones to do, the trailer we did for the Doctor Who stuff, because they gave us time.
Yeah.
yeah. we had ages to develop those and design each prop and everything like that, and work out how we wanted to do it and go back and forth with the director and then hand deliver it in time for the shoot. Like, it was lovely, that one. I'd say from a fun standpoint, like as in a sort of thing, the finger food short film we worked on for Jacob Dudman was my favourite, I think.
That's the one I would say as well. I think
it was stressful,
very stressful, but it was like a really cool experience. Firstly, it was our first film as a company that we'd worked on, and so that felt like a really positive step in the right direction for all of us, and it was a very exciting thing to work on. But secondly, it was very far removed from what we usually do. It's that boy up there. Is the alien masks.
Yeah, the alien head.
But it was a ridiculous turnaround in a format that we aren't usually working in sort of casting and latex work and all of that kind of stuff. So it was kind of cool to prove to ourselves that we could do it when we all sort of came together and worked everything out and overcame obstacles that were tricky and stressful. Lots of swearing, but yeah, I think it was, you know, one of those that was kind of like, when we crossed the finish line on that, it was a real like, fuck, guys, we did that. Like, everything was telling us we shouldn't. Everything was telling us we shouldn't. There were proper industry professionals who specialize in mask making and latex work and all of that kind of stuff going, no, that's not achievable in that time frame. It's just not. And to have sort of been able to pull that off was, yeah, a really, really, really cool moment for the team, I would have said.
Nice. So going back to the swearing, have we ever, obviously you both swear a lot when it comes a bit too stressful. I think we've confirmed that from the jobs you've been stating. Have you ever heard an actor or a talent gone, oh, fuck's sake, that didn't work, or oh, shit, or just out of the blue of one of your own team, actually?
Yes to all of the above.
Yeah, there's been a few times where there's been certain.
I can think of examples of people, but I don't want to dob them in. It was at an event that we were working at, and we were displaying at, and I was outside with a couple of cast members, and yeah, they were all just swearing like troopers, and I was like, oh, this is not the usual vibe that I get from these people, because everyone in our industry, I think, has a PR mode and, you know, media vibes. But
everyone's got a sort of customer voice kind of thing. Like when I used to work in John Lewis, there's a level of we know what's appropriate to say, but like a lot of the stars we're referring to there have like hung out with each other at conventions and stuff over and over again. I had a particularly interesting one at an event. I can't be too specific about this because he was the only guest at this event.
Yeah.
He did an interview with someone of which 5 minutes of the interview had to be cut out because he just went on such a strange tangent.
Yeah. I've heard this story. It's something else.
Yeah. And then when I went over to speak to him, because we were displaying it as well, there was a brief second where he tried to inquire whether or not I could become his drug dealer, of which I must clarify, I do not deal drugs and have never dealt drugs. But I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah, sometimes talent is particularly interesting to work with in that regard. We've not had any, I'd say, bad experiences with talent, but you can tell sometimes when they're having a bad day and they're kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And swearing a bit. I mean, we swear all the time, though. Like that's the main. I can't think of a specific example because I do it so often that I'm you know, every time I sort of start. I what happened the other day? I got burnt during the metal turning I was doing on the Gladiators project,
yes.
And there was a few choice words where I was just sort of yelling at the machine a bit, kind of going, "Why have you done that then?" I the C word, which we said we wouldn't quite go for. So there was a few of that. It's like, oh, well, why the fuck do you have to do that, for fuck's sake? You know, like, kind of, there's one I've been recently using quite a lot, which is, well, I'm glad you fucking did that, because now I wasn't angry at you before, and now I am. So that's usually when something's gone just completely wrong for no apparent reason, or there's just a few sort of cowboy moments we've had recently.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to fix your belt sander on the Gladiator's build, and it was like 2:45 in the morning. This belt sander was not cooperating, and I couldn't understand why. And James was off lathing something in the corner or milling something, I can't remember. It was very, very early in the morning or very late at night. And every time I changed something on it, it would still just not work. And I was just going, well, why the fuck? Like, what is actually happening? Why is this happening? Can someone fucking tell me? It was a day. It was a day.
Yeah, and a night, and a bit of
and a night.
So,
and
you
quite
know,
a lot of morning.
it was fun. But the thing is, like, there's obviously, you have these moments, but again, the overriding passion for these things is I wouldn't rather be doing anything else currently. There's nothing I can think of that I would prefer to be doing than doing that. Because even though it's strenuous and stressful, it's a challenge, you know. I find in those moments that, like, oddly, to not get too deep in this regard, but, like, you're alive in those moments. You're doing the thing you love doing, and you wouldn't want to be doing anything else. And just, you know, that job involves you doing this particular thing. And, you know, if that's what you want to do, then you're doing it. You know, you're the only person making yourself do these things.
Yeah.
So you kind of
have to go. It is very much Stockholm syndrome, because you're kind of like sat there in the moment going, oh my God, I hate this. Why is this not working? What's going on? What the fuck? And then you step away from it after like the completion date and you go, oh, that was such a good project to work on. I loved every second.
That looked so good at the end, wasn't it? Oh, look at the lights.
I loved that.
Brilliant. It just worked really well, didn't it? And the director was so nice, and it was great, you know. Whereas the reality is just sort of, it's like that TikTok trend to where it's like the dun 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 dun, and then it cuts back to spinning round like a ballerina, and it's just that kind of thing where it's just like in the moment it's awful, and then it cuts away to just being nice at the end of it, like, oh, that was a good job, I like that, nice. It is what it is, I guess. In this thing, you know, we've signed up for it.
If I came to both of you today and I said, I've got a project, could be Marvel, could be Star Wars, could be anything, what project would you want to work on?
Any project ever, or just like particularly Marvel, Star Wars, or
any project ever, any project that's been come or gone, or you know anything at all?
Well, actually, I'll probably say what we were talking about earlier on. I figure Pirates of the Caribbean rocked up right about now.
I was gonna say we were discussing this the other day because we had the soundtrack on while we were working, and I was like, there are a couple of films in life that I look back on and go, fuck, I wish I'd been, like, working on those. Like, I wish I'd been of the age and in the industry to be working on those. I think the Pirates of the Caribbean films would have been so good to work on in any capacity. I think it just, like, you watch the films and they're fun. You watch the behind the scenes and they're fun. Like, it just looks like it would have been the best time. Like that was going to be my answer as well. I think Pirates of the Caribbean would have been.
I'm sorry, I've taken.
Would have been
answer.
Fantastic.
I mean, you have Pirates of the Caribbean. I'll say as a secondary.
We could both have
one,
Pirates of the Caribbean. We're on the same team.
Wait, I think you'll want my secondary one as well. I think Indiana Jones.
Oh fuck! Yeah, any of those old bangers would be great.
Yeah, just all the props of those look really fun. I think I found this interesting actually, thinking about it the other day. There's movies that I really like, but when I think about my applicable skill set. Like, to say Twisters again, I'm really obsessed with Twisters at the moment.
Yeah.
I watched that and I thought, there's, like, no props in this that I could have made. Like, there's the truck they've got going on with all the sort of bits attached to it. Yeah, sure, I could have probably helped on that. But to be honest with you, like, there are lots of movies that get made that I know I couldn't have really done very much on, and I appreciate them as works of art. But Indiana Jones and Pirates of the Caribbean are so prop-laden, and Star Wars, of course, as we say. I mean, Star Wars, they have to create an entire universe, basically.
Yeah, so much universe building.
And same with, obviously, these ones being sort of almost historicals, or they need to create this temple that's come up, whereas, you know, with Twisters, they're driving around a field in Oklahoma, you know, it's not, you don't need to make that, you've got that. But I think one of the sort of other ones I would almost say is in regards to Star Wars is it's interesting to get your head around the different principles that are involved in it, because like Pirates, for instance, is purely historical mostly, but then it's got sort of fantastical items invented for it, whereas and same with Indy really, but Star Wars is all sort of technology and gadgets. There are still artifacts and stuff like that involved. I mean, in fact, Indiana Jones artifacts have popped up in it. You know, the Sankara stones appearing in Andor, I think it was.
It was Andor.
And, you know, so there's things like that. But I saw Doug Chang. I hope I've said his name correctly there. But the sort of, he does the sort of art department stuff at ILM and Lucasfilm. Again, I could be completely getting his titles wrong there. He's probably someone screaming at the screen right now. But he gave a talk on props and design and all that kind of stuff. And he said the secret to Star Wars design is that 20% of it has to be magic. It has to be fantasy. It has to be this sort of space Star Wars element. And then the 80% of it has to be based in reality. And that's the way you find and make things that people recognize. If you make something that's completely alien, no one knows what it is, you know, you can't identify with it and it becomes just a weird looking object. Whereas if someone has I think it was in Boba Fett, they had like a game like old sort of bowling game or something with bits stuck to it, like that item looks real and you don't really think about that item being a real thing because it looks real. And it's done 90% of the work already for you, it being, well, 80% of the work in this case, being the real item. And then they've added bits to it to give it the 20% Star Wars nature of it. But that helps sell it because it's grounded it in something. When you look at the Millennium Falcon set, there are lamps on there that are like old sort of factory warehouse lamps stuck to the wall in a weird way with some sort of bit of alien greebly behind it. But you don't think of it like that. You see it as a real light fitting, but also a space light fitting without it really deceiving you too much.
Yeah.
Who do you think's got more of a potty mouth? Indiana Jones, Darth Vader, or Jack Sparrow?
Oh, Jack Sparrow, 100%.
Yeah, it's got to be Jack Sparrow. I mean, Darth Vader seems pretty like cool and collect. I mean, like he got told his love of his life, carrying his children, had died, and he went
no.
Like you know. There is several choice words that could have been in place in that sentence, which is like you know, smashing walls, just screaming, you know, fuck, you know, like that kind of thing. But like he's too much of a nice guy to actually do those things, which is strange saying that about a child killer. We move.
Jack Sparrow's just pissed all the time as well, like he's living his best life.
Jack Sparrow is held back by the Disney rating there. Yeah. You know, you'd be like, why is all the rum gone? Fuck this shit, I'm out, you know. Like, it's very, very sort of easy. Indy, though, I feel like Indy's got to be up there.
Indy would give him a run for his money, but I think Jack would be more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just purely because of the constant booze.
Mm.
Like, when I drink, I swear even more than I usually do, and that is saying something, so...
Well, more than you do now. Swearing quite a bit now, but I drink. Yeah. Unless you're drinking, and then obviously I'm not here to judge.
Yeah, no, a few choice nights in Tortuga, and he's probably said some interesting things.
I feel like he's also surrounded by people who would swear more, whereas, like, Indy, he's a professor at uni all this kind of stuff. Or is it uni? I can't remember. But he's a professor. He's in college. He's in a more esteemed world than a load of pirates getting pissed on a boat, you know.
But his dad is Scottish.
Yeah.
Was it or Irish? Is Sean Connery Irish or is he Scottish? I thought he was Scottish.
No one can ever tell what his accent was in any film he ever worked
on. He's the father of American in Indiana Jones. Yeah. So,
here's a question. What is your favourite swear word to use? Now, in the podcast, I've had many people say bollocks, bastard, fuck. What is your favourite swear word?
I don't know if it's like the worst swear word in the world, but I really like prick. Like, it just feels right to the point. You can use it in so many contexts and ways. It just, sometimes, you don't have to overcomplicate things, you can just fucking prick, you know?
I'm trying to think. I quite like wanker. That's a particular... you know, is very British, you know, in the roots there. No, I think I use so many of them sort of as a spectrum of terminology. It's hard to pick a favorite. It's like picking a favorite child, you know? It's they're all part of my family. One day someone's going to come on here and say something completely left field.
So, you guys, obviously, we've discussed that you're prop makers and what you do. Have you ever taken a prop that you've made and, like, that's a really good prop and taken that home with me? That's now a memory on the shelf?
We've not... kind of depends what we're allowed to keep.
Yeah, like, I don't think we've ever... We've never taken anything we shouldn't have taken, is effectively the... Because our role in most walks of what we've done so far is we will deliver it to set. Very rarely do we get to stay on set and then see the afterlife of it, unless it's particularly written into the sort of deal. For instance, with the collection box set, we loaned them the Dalek gun for filming, so we got to keep the Dalek gun for filming after filming. And some photo shoots we've done, we've brought along props that we own, and then we get to keep afterwards. So there's not really been anything particularly that we've kind of gone, oh yeah, I'm having that afterwards kind of thing, because a lot of the time we don't see the props again. They just end up in storage, or someone else has the idea to take them instead and keeps them at their house. So
I often keep production made bits of things.
Yeah,
like this is what we worked on. Well, this is a bit of what we worked on for Gladiators. That's all you'll get so far, and then you'll see it. But you know, there's often, you know, you make extras or spares just in case something goes wrong. So I've got like a little shelf of production made bits.
Yeah, I've got souvenirs.
Are like a nice reminder of things that we've worked on without it actually being the prop.
I've got this one. And so when we did Tales of the TARDIS, the 60th special one, we were working at Rubber Replicas at the time. The only sort of classic sonic screwdriver bottom section we had kicking around was one I'd machined as a prototype for the official fourth Doctor screwdrivers the BBC had done. And so we had a top section for one of those, which was a little bit more accurate than this, but we swapped the bottom piece onto that. And so this is the original top piece of the screwdriver that ended up on screen, effectively. So that was a sort of nice little memento of something I'd machined when I was like 17, and then now it ended up as a screen used prop, half of it did at least, and this is the bit that didn't get to go onto screen, but now lives here.
Nice one. What advice would you give someone that wants to go into the profession that we're in? So someone wants to get into prop makes, or wants to go into props in general, what advice would you give them?
Run. Go for accounting instead. It's more money. I would say... I'm trying to not be pessimistic, but I want to say something.
I'd say stick with it.
Yes.
Because there is it's especially when you're starting out, and especially when you're first getting into things, it's a very long slog. Like James was saying, the best, you know, way to get somewhere quickly in this industry is slowly.
Yeah. Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah, you kind of just got to stick with it. The other thing I would say is find a team, because there have been projects that we've done that none of us, no matter our capabilities in anything, could have done as a single person. Mm-hmm. It was when we came together as a team that we were able to do these things, like the Gladiators prop that we did the other day. Neither of us could have done that
in the
on our own
frame. No.
There was just no chance at all. So having a team that you can bounce ideas off, but also like share the experiences with, and the highs and lows as well. Yeah, those would be my two things. Find a team and stick with it.
Yeah, I think the primary thing I would say is like, don't have an ego. You can know your worth and be appreciative of your, you know, your talent, and understand what you can do and what you can't do kind of thing. But as Josh was saying there, echoing there, the find the team thing is get used to working in a team, because you will very rarely walk up to set. Like, for instance, Russell T Davies does not just walk up and write a script and send it off and that is job done. There are producers, there are script editors, there is a team of people that will help curate what ends up on screen following that. And you have to get used to the fact that other people are going to play with your toys in this situation. Otherwise, you will very quickly sort of, you know, be kicked to the curb, effectively. So try to, you know, get over yourself, effectively. And then again, yeah, the fastest way to get where you want to be is slowly. Do not think that you are going to just step onto a set day one and you are going to be working on every Marvel movie for the rest of time, you have to keep looking for this. You have to keep doing it. You know, people who are, you know, Olympians have to train. They practice. They keep going. They do this. They do not just rock up to the next Olympic 4 years later and are as good as they were last time. You kind of have to keep the momentum and keep challenging yourself and finding these things. And of course, having a portfolio, having a body of work behind you, it doesn't have to be all official work. It doesn't have to be stuff that you've done in the industry. You can just, oh, I've always wanted to make that thing that I saw on this one program. I'm going to have a go at doing that. I'm going to try and get all the paints. I'm going to try and do this. I'm going to try and do that. Showing that you can do the thing allows you to sort of open doors, because people go, of course you can do that thing, because I've seen that. For instance, the alien heads that Josh had mentioned, the reason we had that gig is because I had done the Sea Devils on Legend of the Sea Devils for Doctor Who. They had seen me doing that and went, oh, he can do that. I actually didn't end up doing any of the sculpting. Josh did, but that's the thing. Showing off you can do a skill is kind of, I kind of went, oh, I don't know about this, because of like all the professionals in the industry had turned away and gone, nah. Like with Legend of the Sea Devils, I hadn't done the sculpt. I had just sort of finished off the latex castings and attached things to it, whereas this required a whole thing. So it's effectively, they saw me do something and they went, oh, that means he can do it repeatably, kind of thing. And that's the kind of thing you have to put in your portfolio, is if you want certain jobs, you have to show you can do that skill set. And with the Sea Devils one, they had seen I had done some work at Millennium Effects. I'd done work experience at Millennium Effects. So they'd seen that I had done that and had gone, oh, well, you can do that. I had actually spent most of my time focusing on the animatronic side of things at MFX because I do machining. But they don't need to know that. We delivered 7 Sea Devils to set with 2 days to do it. We came in Monday morning, and by Tuesday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they were in Cardiff on set filming. You know, if you can do it and you have the confidence to do it, then do it. But there is a caveat to that, is know when you can't do something. There is, you can say yes to anything and you can challenge yourself to do it, but there has to come a time where you understand that some jobs can be too big. Some jobs aren't, you know, no, you have to know when to say no effectively, because sometimes it's going to be overwhelming and not every opportunity necessarily is going to be a good one for you if it will, you know, take as much of a toll as it can do. So that's, it's all about knowing the balance, finding the right place.
And also if you don't deliver to the standard that you had wanted to or were expected to, and you'd sort of committed to it, then it can be quite disastrous reputation wise and stuff like that, because word spreads in the industry very quickly.
Yeah, like if there is something that you're not happy with, you need to understand that. You need to not, you know, push it too far, because, you know, everyone's luck runs out eventually if you play that kind of level of dangerous game. I feel like I've gone massively off track of whatever the original question was. The ADHD has moved me.
So we are coming to the end of the podcast, guys, and what I'd like to do is you guys have that 1 minute to explain what you guys are doing next and how people can find your work.
What are we doing next? What can we say that we're doing next?
I'd say the next thing we can say we're doing is we're currently working on the Rubber Replica's official River Song screwdriver run. We're also working on the official Sonic Pen run, Miss Foster's Sonic Pen from Series 4. So we're doing a lot of official sort of BBC licensed products that are going to be available to Doctor Who fans. We have an exhibition coming up. There is an exhibition being put on by the National Space Centre at the end of September, where they want us to effectively create a almost sort of like the Doctor Who experience style thing for this event they're doing called Brit Sci-Fi, where we will be curating sort of original artifacts from the show, from various other shows and kind of things, and they will be on display for the public. So we're also building a bunch of things to go alongside that, like every Sonic screwdriver ever, for instance, will be on display there. So we're working on that for a public exhibition. Outside of that, I think everything else may be NDA'd currently. But anything industry-wise is NDA'd. As mentioned, we have done something recently for Gladiators, which will be appearing at some point in the second series they're doing at the moment. But other than that, I think everything is probably in murky waters.
How can people find you? You got Instagram? You got
Instagram, we've got YouTube, we've got Twitter, website, Facebook, Twitter, website. Facebook, all that good jazz. Just search Little Shop Props and we shall be there.
Little Shop at Little Shop Props on most of them, but usually you can just find them. It's littleshopprops.com, I believe the website is.
So how I like to end the podcast is that we're both going to, all three of us are going to say our favourite swear word at the top of our voices, and that's how we're going to end this podcast. Perfect. Okay. So three,
okay.
Two, one.
Wankers!
Fantastic, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure you guys come on the podcast. I look forward to seeing your work in the future, and I hope to see you guys very, very soon.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.